Hello and good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Absolutely fantastic. So, what's the day been like for you today?
It's a good day. It's my publication day.
That's one of those things that I wish that readers would understand, that you know, it takes so long to get here, but when it's here, it's a day of celebration.
It really is. It really is.
And this particular book, though, is a big piece of you, because, I mean, this involves your sister, Angie.
Yes.
Wow. To put it on paper, I'm a daily writer. I know what it's like to put my life on paper. What about for you?
It was difficult at times, and ultimately it was very healing.
When you say healing, does that mean that there will be ways that you can go out and teach others that in their own personal life, they can go on their own investigation to locate answers?
I hope so, by example.
Yeah. To get to this moment goes through an editing process. When you have lived it and then you put it on paper and then you have to send it to the editor, that's a tough time for authors, because it's someone else's interpretation of your journey.
Yes, that's true. And long before the book found the shape that it's in and found the publisher that it did, I got some really good advice, and I got some advice that I knew right away was wrong.
In
terms of the story.
How did you keep it to being a great read, or a read that people can really jump into? Because I love a thesaurus. I love using words, and you know, and that can be such a dangerous game. What about for you?
Yes. Oh, I suffer from the same disease. I polish and polish and polish, and I find the perfect word. And I did that, and I wrote a 400-page mess with beautiful sentences, half of which had to go. So I think the trick is to ultimately, once you figure out, or maybe the trick is don't do it that way, but if you do, the trick then is to cut.
Yeah, because one of the reasons why I created this channel for iHeartRadio was to get into the lives of those that are at home that have things that they want to write or have written, but they haven't released it. So it's like, well, we got to talk with the authors then, because they've got the journey.
Yeah, and it is a journey with a lot of bumps in the road.
How did you handle the perfectionist?
The perfectionist inside of me?
Oh, yeah.
I tried to tell her to wait her turn. You know, let me just get it down. You can fix it once I've gotten it down.
So then you do believe in a fermenting stage then, where you go back to it and say, okay, we've already written it down. Let's go back to it after I'm not the author, but rather I'm going to be the receiver.
Yeah, and the best way to do that is to actually put some time between when you wrote it and when you pick it up again, so you can get some of that objectivity. Put it away for, you know, a few weeks or a few months even, you know, just so that you can then read it as though someone else wrote it.
Yep. The book we're talking about is Everywhere I Look. Did you keep a journal while you were doing the investigation?
The first thing I did, I'm not generally a journal keeper, but the first thing I did when I decided I was going to write Angie's story was pick up a notebook and write every memory I could think of my life with her. And then once I started investigating, I took a lot of notes, and I wrote versions of those chapters very quickly, you know, when the information was fresh and new. And then went back and changed them and shaped them later on.
And isn't it odd, even though she is your sister, there were things that you discovered that you did not know. And it's like, wow. I have friends I think I know everything about, but I'm not going to say that I do. But with a sister that you lived with.
You know, we grew up in a very secretive family.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not surprising to me that I didn't know things. I mean, I was surprised by the things I discovered, for sure. But my parents, you know, and I think a lot of people of their generation, there was such a perfectionism, speaking of perfectionism, in the 1950s as to who you were supposed to be and how you were supposed to behave. And the only way to do that, I think, was to just show part of yourself. And unfortunately, my parents did that within the family, too.
Wow. right away, my imagination takes off and I'm going, oh my God, she's talking about, you know, family secrets. No wonder they didn't smile in those black and white photographs, because families did and still do hold secrets.
Yeah. Yeah. And secrets do damage. They definitely do damage.
Yeah. Not just in this generation, but we're talking about it can go several generations.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one of the ways that I feel that the book was an ultimately healing project is the truth telling.
Well, let me ask you this question then. When you put it down on paper and you talk about it as being healing, one of the things that I've learned with other creative people is that once you set it free, your whole mind, body, and soul, it's like walking into a very clean closet now. What are you replanting or replenishing in your life now?
That's a lovely question. You know, one thing that came back to me was my relationship with my sister. Mm-hmm. At its best, you know, writing it felt like a collaboration at times. I felt she was really with me, mm-hmm. and I felt close to her again.
I love that. And the reason being, because if you were in this studio, you would see the ashes of my mother and my brother and all of my rescue dogs, because I believe that we are still connected.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful.
Oh, man. You know, one of the things that I've learned about things like this, you know, people are going to put it as a true crime story, when in fact, to me, it's a story of releasing. So how you didn't sugarcoat anything in here.
No, but you know what I did to shift that true crime expectation is I revealed who the killers were on the first page.
Nice.
Yeah. I just didn't want that to be the focus.
Yeah. So was it something right from the very beginning, or was that something that you had to grow into?
It was an instinct.
Really?
It was an instinct. It was the first thing I did was I wrote the experience of meeting them. Wow. And I met them the day before it happened.
Wow.
So that led right into the murder. It's the murders themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're not talking about just one murder here. We're talking about three people.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. Actually a fourth, because my sister was 30 weeks pregnant. So that baby would have been viable. So that was actually considered a fourth murder in the trial.
My wife's mother was murdered. I know what it's like to go through one murder. I can't imagine what it did to your community as well as your family for four.
You know, my family was so far removed from Angie and her family, not just geographically, though we were on opposite ends of the country, but my mother and my sister did not have a good relationship. Mm-hmm. And so there was a sort of... my father took it much harder than my mother did, but my mother just sort of accepted it like, well, you know, she had a hard life. This is what happens. And we didn't even memorialize them, which now looking back, I was 19 at the time and I didn't question it. But now looking back, that's unbelievable to me.
And isn't it weird how life works that way? At 19, we're ready to take on the world. We've got this thing made. But yet, if I had what I know today at 19, it'd be a different plan.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I was visiting my sister, and for the first time in my life, I was a sophomore in college. She had not gone to school. I for the first time in my life, I was feeling superior. I was feeling, you know, oh, I've got to go conquer the world. I don't have time for this.
Yep.
And, you know, that's my biggest regret, was that I just, you know, had that attitude the very last time I saw her.
Do you feel that Angie was running away from something? Because, you know, I grew up in the state of Montana. I'm in Carolina. Oh, heck yes. I was running away from my family.
You got it. She began running away from home at 12 years old.
Oh, wow.
When I was six, she'd disappear for, you know, I don't even know the time frames, whether it was weeks or it was probably sometimes even less than a week, but it felt like forever to me.
Yeah.
And then eventually my parents began sending her away to what I thought were boarding schools. And that's something that I researched in the book and discovered, that she was in some pretty harsh lockups.
Wow. This might be too personal, but there's something that you and I can relate with, and that is when a sister or a brother run away. And I'll never forget when my brother did. And people always say, well, do you have a problem with abandonment? Well, it wasn't from my parents. It was from my brother running away.
Yeah.
That is what injured me more than anything. What
yes.
about you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I to this day, I have terrible, terrible sleep habits. I cannot wind down at night. Mm. And I know it's because I expect the people I love to disappear if I let my guard down.
So true. That is so true. What have you learned about this? Because, I mean, to go into it, you're a student, and you're a brave and a courageous student to go in there and to listen to what your soul is about ready to put out.
It's funny you put it that way, because one of the things my sister and brother-in-law said to me, they visited me once on my college campus, and I said, you know, there's the library. That's where I spend way too much time. And they went, oh, well, excuse me, miseducated. And I actually say in the book, here I am, miseducated, educating my way back to you.
Another question about the writing, because I have been a daily writer for 30 years. My biggest question now, and you being an author yourself, what do you do with the original writing? Because beyond us, you know, my wife says, well, I'll just, when you are, you know, cremated, it'll go with you. No. Do you believe that you've written something here that belongs in somebody else's hands a couple of generations from now?
Anything I believe that about, I have set out to publish. Early drafts, some of them I keep for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of for sentimental reasons or to remember who I was at a particular time. And now, of course, most of my drafts are electronic because I write on the computer.
That's courageous to do that, because I don't trust that computer one single bit.
So you write by hand?
I do, and I've got my favorite writing instruments. When I was going to ask you about that, when you were taking the notes and things, did you have a favorite writing instrument?
I had what I called my Angie notebook.
Nice.
Where I filled the memories. But then I moved right to computer for all the rest.
Oh, I don't have that confidence. I don't know if I've had too many things when it comes to doing like what we're doing today disappear, and you're going, I'm never going to get that moment back again.
Yeah. Fortunately, that didn't happen with this book, but I have had it happen with other writing projects.
Where can people go to find out more about you? Because I want them to jump into your style and your storytelling.
Oh, thank you. I do have a website. It's my name in small letters, Onagritz, altogether, .com.
That's the easiest thing you can do. I mean, that is simple. So somebody coached you well on that.
And that has links to the book, which is available everywhere as of today. It just came out today.
I love it. Well, when book authors, when they release books, that doesn't mean that they're not writing another book. Can you talk about what's next?
Yeah, I actually have two books coming out later in the year. In some ways, very different. They're for teenagers, and they're novels written in verse. So, you know, each page is a poem, and that builds the story. And they're very different in that sense. The audience is different, the form is different, but there are certain connections. The first one is it has an element of family secrets and a sister connection.
Wow.
And the second one is based on the research that I did for Everywhere I Look. There's one of the reform schools. I learned so much about the daily life there. I thought this is a fascinating setting to put a teenager in and explore. So it's a historical novel as accurately as I could get that particular environment, so that kids could learn about what life was like for kids who were incarcerated at that time.
See, you are a tool. You are really using your strength as a creative person receiving from the universe.
Thank you. I at some point it just occurred to me, you know, about 10, 12 years ago when I started to think about writing Angie's stories, I just thought, oh, that's why her sister is a writer. Her story is meant to be told.
Wow. Well, when you're ready to release those next books, you've got to come back, especially the book with the written in verse, because my last book was that way. It's 53 pieces of poetry that just happen to tell a story.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, so I'm speaking your street when we when you say, you know, that kind of a thing.
Wow. Yeah, I would love to. I would love to come back and talk to you about them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you be brilliant today. OK, Miss Ona.
All right. Thank you. Good to talk to you.